Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to Africa Link, a program that brings you stories from around the African continent. It's Friday, the 4th of September, and I'm Jane Ayeko Kumet in Bonn, Germany. Coming up in our program today, I'm not an infamous killer, former Congolese rebel leader Bosco Ntaganda tells court on his second day of trial.
As an officer, I have always fought with people in uniform. I have never attacked civilians. On the other hand, Your Honors, I have always protected them.
Political parties in Uganda train the youth to fight ahead of presidential elections scheduled for early next year.
The team you see here is part of our security system, part of our security detail, because now our lives are in danger.
Those and more stories coming up shortly.
Top story.
Former Democratic Republic of Congo rebel leader Bosco Ntaganda, who is undergoing trial in the International Criminal Court in The Hague, has denied being an infamous killer, often referred to as the Terminator. Ntaganda, who publicly spoke for the first time since he handed himself over to the ICC in 2013, said he was not a criminal but a soldier who protected civilians. The trial of the 41-year-old is being broadcast on local radio stations in the DRC. For the first time, victims of his alleged actions will hear the former rebel leader defend himself. Lauren Komito with more on that report.
This is the first time the man dubbed the Terminator for his alleged ruthlessness has spoken publicly since turning himself over to the court in 2013. In his address to judges, Ntaganda, speaking through an interpreter, immediately took issue with that moniker.
I've been described as a Terminator, as an infamous killer, but that is not me. I am not the Bosco Ntaganda depicted to you by the prosecutor yesterday.
Indeed, prosecutors on the opening day of his trial called Ntaganda a notorious and powerful military leader who commanded troops that slaughtered hundreds of civilians in the resource-rich Ituri region of Congo in 2002 and 2003. They say he perpetrated an ethnic conflict for his own power and economic gain, and that he used child soldiers to do it. Even his own young recruits, they said, were used as sexual slaves, and for the first time in international law, prosecutors have charged a man with war crimes committed against his own side. But during Ntaganda's almost 10-minute address, he insisted he was a military man, that an ethnic conflict existed in Ituri long before he arrived on the scene, and that he joined the Union of Congolese Patriots, or UPC, to protect civilians. The soft-spoken accused again spoke through an interpreter.
As an officer, I have always fought with people in uniform. I have never attacked civilians. On the other hand, Your Honors, I have always protected them.
Ntaganda said he is confident, and he denied prosecutors' charges that he is interfering with witnesses. Ntaganda's lawyers argued that their client's interest in Ituri was militarily motivated and that he was not after riches, as prosecutors allege. Earlier in the day, representatives for both the child soldiers and the victims of civilian attacks told a different story. Sarah Pillay represents almost 300 child soldiers who, like the attack victims, will remain anonymous and be identified only by numbers. Many of the female child soldiers she represents were used as sexual slaves, she said, only to be shunned by their families after giving birth to children they often despise. She spoke through an interpreter.
These young girls, Mr. President, Your Honors, are faced with double victimization because they are victims of rapes and sexual violence, and some of them gave birth to other victims, children who will never know their fathers and who are a constant reminder of the reprehensible acts inflicted upon their mothers. A great many of these women also contracted sexually transmitted diseases.
Many of her clients participated in the trial of Ntaganda's commander, Thomas Lubanga, who has already been convicted for using child soldiers in the same conflict. But Palais says her clients are frustrated with the verdict that left out victims of sexual violence and rape. This court, she said, is all they have left. The first witness will be called to the stand on September 15th.
That was Lauren Komito with that report. Bosco Ntaganda is not the first Congolese warlord to appear before the ICC. On 7th March 2014, Germaine Katanga, also known as Simba, was convicted. Towards the end of last year, Thomas Lubanga was also found guilty and now serves a 14-year sentence. All the rebels were convicted of war crimes and crimes against humanity. But what do we know about these people and several others? Happiness Mutanji and Sandra Oparaji with some facts.
Born in 1973 in Rwanda, Bosco Ntaganda has been regarded by human rights organizations as one of the most brutal warlords in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Ntaganda, who currently faces a total of 18 charges of war crimes and crimes against humanity, first fought on the side of Tutsi rebels under Paul Kagame, who ended the Rwandan genocide in 1994.
In 2006, the ICC issued the first arrest warrant for Ntaganda, but he gave himself up in March 2013. Ntaganda was then the Deputy Chief of Staff of Patriotic Forces for the Liberation of Congo, FPLC, the military wing of the Union of Congolese Patriots Party, UPC.
Founder of the UPC in 2000, Congolese Thomas Lubanga Diallo, was arrested in 2005 after the murder of 9 UN soldiers in Kinshasa. He was transferred to The Hague a year later, where he was tried on charges of war crimes and accused of ordering the recruitment of hundreds of child soldiers aged less than 15. At the end of 2014, Lubanga was found guilty and was sentenced to a prison term of 14 years.
The conflict in Ituri province was largely an ethnic conflict between the Hema and Lendu people, with the involvement of other countries, including Uganda.
During the Ituri conflict, Germaine Katanga was a commander of the Patriotic Resistance Forces in Ituri, FPRI. Katanga was accused of war crimes and crimes against humanity in connection with his leadership role during an attack in February 2003 on the village of Bogoro, which was mainly inhabited by Hema, that left 200 people dead. On March 7, 2014, the second trial chamber in The Hague found Katanga guilty. He was sentenced to 12 years in prison.
Matthew Ngujoro Chui, who is the leader of the Lendu Militia Group, the Union of Nationalist and Intranationalist, FNI, played a role in the attack on Bogoro. The prosecution accused him of being an accessory to murder, rape, and recruitment of child soldiers. In December 2012, the ICC's second chamber declared him not guilty on all counts, saying the evidence against him had not been strong enough.
The second conflict in DRC to occupy the ICC prosecution was between the provinces of North and South Kivu in 2009 and 2010. The conflict was fought between the Congolese army, partly supported by UN troops, the Rwandan army, and the Democratic Forces for the Liberation of Rwanda, FDLR.
Silvestre Mudakumura, who was believed to be the commander-in-chief of the FDLR, has also been accused by the ICC prosecutors of a series of war crimes and crimes against humanity. Since July 2012, a warrant has been out for his arrest.
That fact box was presented by Happiness Mutanji and Sandra Oparaji.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
In Uganda, tension is high as the country prepares for the general elections next year. Different political parties have resorted to training militia groups to reportedly guard their votes. As Alex Jita reports from Kampala, there is increasing fear that the election could be marred by violence.
Whenever violence is associated with elections in Uganda, one name will come to people's minds: Kakoza Mutale, a special presidential advisor on political affairs. Mutale, a retired major in the Ugandan People's Defense Forces, led a group of violent youths in 2006 to beat up people opposed to President Museveni's rule. Since then, elections in Uganda have been associated with violence. With less than a year to the elections, Kakoza Mutale is back in action. He was pictured in the jungles training a group of 500 youths. It is said these are being prepared to mess up opposition campaign rallies. We could not independently confirm this, as the ruling party, the National Resistance Movement, denied any involvement or knowledge of Mutale's plans. Brigadier Jim Muhwez is Uganda's Minister for Information.
There must be respect of law. So if anybody infringes the law, of course the government will bring him to book. We have enough security personnel and bodies to maintain law and order. The police is there. Political parties are mobilized. Kakoza Mutale has got a party he supports.
After pictures of Mutale's training camp leaked, opposition politicians announced that they felt their lives were in danger. But Kampala Lord Mayor Erias Lukwago, who is from the opposition, took this to another level. He recruited his own group.
The team you see here is part of our security system, part of our security detail, because now our lives are in danger.
These developments have left some Ugandans scared that the country could plunge into a civil war again. Security forces have now summoned both Erias Lukwago and Kakoza Mutale for questioning. Fred Enanga is the spokesperson of the Uganda police.
We are totally against this, and the police has already made arrangements to summon the two, and any others who are intending to go ahead with forming this self-described militia and vigilantes.
Former Ugandan Prime Minister, dubbed to be President Museveni's biggest challenger in the election, Amama Mbabazi, is also rumored to be training his own group. The Interreligious Council that brings together Uganda's religious leaders has asked politicians to break up these groups. The chairman of the Electoral Commission, Badru Chigundu, joined the religious leaders in calling for the probe into politicians said to be organizing armed groups to disrupt elections. This is not the first time such groups are being created. There is a fear that if the situation is not handled now, this could cause election violence.
Alex Jita in Kampala, Uganda.
Human rights.
Most refugees from North Africa and the Middle East struggle to find sanctuary in Europe. Within sub-Saharan Africa, South Africa is increasingly seen as a country with a promise. But 6 months after xenophobic attacks that characterized the country for a short while, some are still feeling the pinch. At least 138 foreign nationals, including 64 children, mainly from the DRC and Burundi, now live in a farm about 40 kilometers west of the city of Durban after being ejected from a shut-down refugee site in the residential area Chatsworth. These traumatized refugees are facing another battle after the farming couple who offered them sanctuary have been ordered by a nearby local authority to evict the foreign nationals. DW Subri Govenda visited the farm and reports about the refugees' claim that their human rights are being violated.
These children are part of the 138 foreign nationals, mainly from the DRC and Burundi, who have been given sanctuary by a farming couple, Andrew and Ray Watnabi, for the past 2 months on their land called Hope Farm. It is located about 40 kilometers west of the South African coastal city of Durban. The children are being taken care of by voluntary teachers in a makeshift preschool on the farm. They were forced to come here after the Chatsworth refugee camp in Durban was shut down. Ray Watnabi says they've always offered sanctuary to children and displaced people.
When we heard that there was a group of people whose children had been removed, we wanted to go and help specifically with the children. So we went to find out how we could help, and we were told that the children had been removed to a children's home. When a lawyer got involved, they mentioned to us that there was a possibility that if we gave an address, that the people could get their children back and they would be able to be reunited with them. And that was what we did. We gave our address and said to everybody they could stay here to reunite with their children.
But no sooner had the refugees settled down in their new camp, the Hope Farm owners had been fined for illegally accommodating the foreign nationals. They were also ordered to move them out by the 6th of September. This is Andrew Watnabi.
It doesn't help us because we don't really have a solution. We formed a sort of a meeting of various role players, including the municipality, and it's been expressed to us very, very clearly that by the 6th of the 9th, this group of people need to be off our property. But as yet, we haven't been given, so where must they go?
The affected migrants on the farm say they have appealed to the United Nations High Commission for Refugees to shift them to a third country where they would be safe. 20-year-old Miss Bella Ishatanga is at the farm sanctuary with her mother. She and her parents are from Burundi and have been in South Africa for the past 13 years. When the second phase of xenophobic attacks took place in March, she and her mother were staying with other foreign nationals in an area called Cato Manor in Durban. Their homes were attacked and they were forced to flee to a refugee camp in a nearby town before being transferred to Chatsworth. She and her mother also want to move to another country.
I left school. I do not want to stay in this country. I don't feel safe in this country. Where whichever country that is safe for me, that I know I can stay in, that is safe, I'll be happy to stay in the country.
A young South African, 24-year-old Nigel Kabise, belongs to a Christian charity organization, and he's here at the farm to help the foreign nationals with their daily needs. He is ashamed that his fellow South Africans had been responsible for the traumatic condition in which these foreign nationals find themselves in.
Me as a South African person, it really hurts me seeing what is happening to our fellow brothers and sisters. Judging from seeing of things, of the xenophobia attack and all of those things that is happening to them, not healthy at all. This is not life. I don't think this is what we wanted as a nation itself. I don't see this as a way forward.
Subri Govender in South Africa. As the entire world struggles with effects of climate change, countries from Africa, often on the receiving side, have pledged to step up as observation technology. This, they believe, would enable them come up with solutions that can address environmental calamities. Experts on the subject from at least 48 African countries met in Kenya's capital, Nairobi, to deliberate on this subject. After 5 days of deliberations, participants agreed to share climate information among African countries. From Nairobi, James Shimanyula.
The calamities that participants in the conference are focusing on include El Nino, floods, landslides, drought, land degradation, forest fires, massive felling of trees, sea accidents, and volcanic eruptions. George Wiafe, representing the 15-member Economic Community of West African State, ECOWAS, focused briefly on food security in the ECOWAS region and safety at sea, especially in Ghana, where the regional body's Coastal and Marine Resources Management Center has provided communication equipment to fishermen.
With regard to food security, with the fishery resources we have in the region, these are being overexploited through legal and illegal processes. And then for us to be able to manage the resource and combat the illegal activity so that the resources managed well will help the countries fight against shortage of food. The second issue on security, which is the safety at sea. In Ghana, for example, there are 9,000 small boats. And most of these people go to sea, they don't have any communication gadgets. So what we are providing in Mesa is to forecast the weather conditions before they go to sea. They prepare themselves. And we are giving them small transponder we call UPSEA. And then when they trigger, it sets off alarm to people on land, any big vessel around them to sea, because that is the only technology now that they can use against accidents at sea.
Kenyan Zakaria Theru, one of the many officials representing the IGAD Climate Prediction and Application Center, provided a tip on when and where the weather is expected to change in Africa.
Between October and December, people in equatorial areas, should expect enhanced rainfall. So they need to put in places measures to control flooding and landslides.
George Kosne, representing the Southern African Development Community SADC member state, expounded on how people in the SADC region are affected by the change of weather.
Most of them, they are affected differently. If you look at the southern part of our region this year, the challenge with the minimal rainfall basically affecting food security with the impact of drought. And then if you look at the Mozambique and the Indian Ocean countries, the challenge there with flooding, which also affects food supply to the region.
Addressing participants, Mahbub Muallim, Executive Secretary for the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, IGAD, East Africa Trade and Security Bloc, pointed out that the Monitoring Program for Environment and Security in Africa, known as MESA, is being implemented at the same time with the IGAD Drought Disaster Resilience and Sustainability Initiative.
James Shimanyula in Nairobi.
Your say.
Now, it's that time of the week again when we hear from you, the listener. We've been reporting about the trial of former Congolese rebel leader Bosco Ntaganda in The Hague and the attempt by Democratic Alliance to impeach South Africa's President Jacob Zuma. My colleague Eunice Wanjiru joined me in the studio to present some of your views. So Eunice, what are the listeners saying?
Well, Jane, to start with, Ntaganda's trial in the ICC attracted a lot of responses. As for Usman bin Affan Damaturu, Bosco Ntaganda as a rebel leader has to face and accept any results from the ICC, though he denied all the charges that he's been prosecuted for. He adds that someone whose actions led to the death of about 800,000 lives, recruited child soldiers, and whose soldiers raped young girls should pay for his actions.
And Ras Ngongo's observation is that rebels are often in charge of civil wars in many countries. We all know there are criminal acts like looting and raping, as well as using child soldiers. But we have to understand the source of this, which is dictatorship, which is frequent in most African countries. There is no democracy or freedom of speech, so people try to find other means of liberation. But even then, Ntaganda should be convicted.
And Aliyu Muhammad from Nigeria observes that the opening of the ICC proceedings against Ntaganda at the ICC is highly significant for the thousands of people across Eastern Congo who have suffered, witnessed or documented serious abuses allegedly committed by the warlord and troops under his command. Aliyu says that it also sends a strong warning to other abusive commanders who are still active in Congo.
Well, I hope they heed the warning. Now let's turn to South Africa. Concerning the impeachment of President Jacob Zuma, Muhammad Aliyu is again of the view that Democratic Alliance's move to impeach President Zuma is as impossible as fishing in the desert. He says that this is because the Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir's visit to South Africa was not a self-voluntary trip, but rather that he went there with the purpose of attending the AU summit in respect to his continent.
We still hear from Nigeria, where we have Usman bin Affan Damaturu, who writes, and I quote, "President Jacob Zuma deserves to be impeached for three good reasons. Firstly, for corruption after spending millions to build his personal house. Secondly, the unsatisfied response he made during xenophobic attacks on some South Africans. Thirdly, Marikana attack by police on the workers of the company 2 years ago, which led to the death of many innocent people."
And from Tanzania, Ras France Mokongongo writes, "The curse spreading to those who did wrong to others is following them. Now everything shows Zuma what he did to Mbeki. The younger parties will push out Zuma as he led revolution which caused Mbeki to resign. South Africans should not play with the freedom." Well, that's all we have for you now. And now, a recap of our top stories. I'm not an infamous killer, former Congolese rebel leader Bosco Ntaganda tells court on his second day of trial. And political parties in Uganda train youth to fight ahead of presidential elections next year. That is all we had for you today, but remember, we welcome your comments on this show. Do send us your comment via text message to 49 160 957 59510. an email to feedback.africa@dw.com or do send us a letter to AfricaLink DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. From me, Jane Ayeko-Kumet, and the rest of AfricaLink team, enjoy the rest of your day.